Hey everyone, welcome back to the Mindful Method podcast. I'm your host, Jordana Sade, and I have a very exciting guest with me here today. We have Brooke. She is an expert in pleasure. And Brooke actually came to one of our Mindful Method guest speaker experiences because, as many of you guys know, pleasure is something that a lot of people who struggle with addictive tendencies, especially around food, tend to have these programs or these constructs around pleasure and what that means. And, you know, if it's good or bad or all of these things. And I will never forget the first time that somebody asked me about my relationship with pleasure. And they simply asked, you know, like, what do you think of when you think of pleasure? And literally my answer was like taboo, naughty, like bad. And that's literally like all you need to know about me. This is how we got in this place. Anyways, so I think it's really important to talk about pleasure. I know Brooke is a wealth of knowledge. I'm very excited to hear her journey and how she practices and, you know, dopamine and the brain and all that stuff. But yeah, so just stay tuned, guys. We've got an exciting one for you.
Welcome to the Mindful Method podcast, where we don't just fill your ears, we fill your mind with the tools to enhance your emotional and physical reality. I'm your host, Jordana Sade, here to guide you on this journey of the body-brain connection and help you take your power back to create the life you've always wanted. So grab a seat, because class is in session and our method is on the syllabus. Here at the Mindful Clinic, we're not just changing your mind, we're changing your life. One mindful moment at a time.
Welcome, Brooke.
Thank you for having me. It's delight to see you again. A pleasure, I could say, if we're being cheeky, but you know, it's a little early in the day for that, perhaps.
No, I love that. We are all about that here. Okay, so Brooke, can you please tell me how you got here? Like, what's your story? How did you, from the beginning, I want to hear it all.
Yeah, happy to share. I mean, I will say, I wish someone had on a silver platter been able to say, here, live a low dopamine lifestyle. This will unlock the pleasure portal for you. However, I think if I had heard that, I probably would not have heard it, you know, many years ago. So I came into it from a sideways pathway, which I think a lot of us do, right? And so the reason why people might be listening to your podcast could be for, you know, reason A, B, or C, but they probably get, you know, XYZ benefits from joining in, right? The same was true for me. So I kind of really got into this through kind of two main pathways. One was around sobriety, from drinking and doing recreational drugs. But it was very much a tip of the spear kind of perspective, right? So I wanted to get sober. I didn't really know what that meant. I thought it was going to like clean up my life. Cute. It did not clean up my life. It opened up lots of other shit to unpack. Can I curse here? Is that okay?
Please. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Panic for a second. Uncovered a lot of other stuff to clean up. So it got messier before it got cleaner. And then I used to play this game called the Feel Good Game with a bunch of entrepreneurs from all over the world every single month for years. And it still never clicked what I was doing until I looked at it from a lens of neuroscience. And when I paired neuroscience with spirituality, everything sort of kind of came into the fold for me, because it was a systems approach, right? So I think that's how you manage your work as well, right? It's not X leads to Y always, right? You have to really look at what else is going on in this system. So I kind of got into it from that perspective. And then once I started doing my own research about like the background of addiction, and I have in a prior life, I was a PhD candidate studying biological anthropology. So like when I started re-entering the world that I originally had grown up in, it all really started to make sense. And so when I was able to dive back into neuroscience, it wasn't like, what are these words? It was like, oh, duh, like how have I forgotten all of this stuff? but I was looking at it from a different lens. So that's the long and the short of it. I would say I'm happy to dive into any other topic, how it relates. I can tell stories about travel and addiction and getting sober, all the things, but whatever's most interesting to y'all.
Yeah. The first thing I just want to highlight is, isn't it so cool how things just come full circle? Like you're like, I'm doing this PhD that I'm not really like, I don't really care about. So I'm just not going to finish it. Or I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like you didn't finish it. Right. And then all of a sudden now it's like, oh, that's why I needed to know that information so that I could end up here. I just love the serendipity of life in that sense. So I love that you've highlighted that. And it is, and you're also very similar to me where the way that I was able to like heal myself or, you know, recover was through education. Like it was really learning about the nervous system and how it impacts the body and all those things. So I love that for you. Okay, where do I want to start? I'd like to hear a little bit more about your sobriety. Did you identify as an addict? And then also what becoming sober looked like for you. Let's tap into a little bit of that.
Yeah. Definitely do not love the term addict. I still don't love it. I know for some people that is like a critical banner that they fly and they march behind it. And I'm super into that if that works for them. It didn't resonate with me because I never felt like I hit, you know, quote unquote rock bottom as someone else looking from the outside in would be able to like see. But my life was a fucking mess. I was definitely drinking on a very, very regular basis after work to kind of calm down all the language about taking the edge off and like, I just need to relax. And it's like a very reliable system, that sort of thing, was kind of where it had gotten to, but I had been drinking since college. So it wasn't like this was a new relationship. I mean, that's the thing about alcohol in particular as a drug is it's not for most people like an overnight mess, right? It takes years or decades of a relationship with a substance to kind of wreak a little bit of havoc. But honestly, the background of the addiction was really, I was trying to escape a life I didn't really enjoy. Not just a joy, it was like very hard to tolerate. I was working 80 plus hours a week in a management consulting firm in mergers and acquisitions. I was helping behemoth companies either merge together, excuse me, or separate apart. And it was grueling. And I was really trying to like stick with it. And you know, when you've, I don't know, maybe you've never experienced this, but for me, I knew the week I joined that it was not for me. And it wasn't like, oh, maybe I'll figure it out. It was like full on body reject, crying at the end of the day, calling my mom, being like, what did I do? I'm in Seattle working till midnight. I haven't even been staffed on a project. And she's like, whoa. Now week one of any new job can be a lot, but it really never got better than that. It was hard. And I needed a way to let steam off. And no amount of yoga, no amount of working out, no amount of eating could ever really itch the scratch. But alcohol was pretty effective until it wasn't. So getting sober really looked like I had a lot of starts and stops. You know, I had a lot of like, I'll do a 30-day challenge or a 75-day this or that. And I was always good. I could always make it through. And I was like, oh, I don't have a problem because I can go 75 days without needing a drink. This just really wasn't the case though. Yeah. And so I finally had enough. And now it's been like, let's see if I pull my sobriety counter up. It's been 472 days. So yeah, here we are.
Yeah.
And go down the path there too, but that's the nut of it is I was trying to escape.
Yeah.
And it was pretty.
As most of us are. And so what is the relationship between pleasure and like sobriety? Talk to me a little bit more about that. Like how do they
relate? So our human brains and you know most mammal brains are really good at seeking out pleasure and avoiding pain. Like that's kind of what we're doing day in and day out. We just don't really recognize that that's what's going on in our bodies. And so there's a lot of chemicals that go behind the addiction side of the house. And so I talk most often about dopamine and people think about dopamine and I'll just kind of lay it out for people that maybe haven't talked about it recently. And just as a reminder, in case they forgot, it's a neurotransmitter. And so this is an endogenous chemical that is secreted in our brain, and it really helps our cells in our brain, which are called neurons, communicate with one another. Everyone's heard of them. They just know them in different names: adrenaline, serotonin, endorphins, right? People have heard of all of these things. So dopamine is often referred to as like the feel-good hormone. We talked about the feel-good game before, or the pleasure neurotransmitter. It's a little cheeky because dopamine is most closely associated with desire, and we desire what pleases us. And so it's obviously related to pleasure as well, but it's a little bit confusing when people are like, well, I actually don't enjoy drinking anymore. Yeah, but you like the lead up. You like the anticipation of it. You like the relief that's coming, the relief that you think is coming, even if it doesn't come. That desire piece is really where dopamine comes into play. And I can go through this in various levels of detail, and it's kind of a fun story to build. But essentially, we can become addicted. I'll just use the word. People won't like it because I'm going to include other things other than drug and alcohol in this discussion, but we can become addicted to things that we have lots of exposure to, food included, right? Most of us eat every single day, right? When we have a lot of exposure to something plus a very heightened emotional response, it doesn't have to be a good response. We have like a matching, and it gets imprinted in our neurosystem, in our biology. This could be eating a cookie, could be watching a sports game or drinking a glass of quote unquote fine wine at the end of the day. It has to do with addiction because we're talking about the anticipation of the thing. So most of us spend more time like looking forward to something than we do doing the actual activity, right? When we anticipate the weekend, 5 days of the week, we anticipate the weekend, right? Our next vacation, it's on the calendar. We have a countdown planner. We look at it every single day. It's coming. Sex, we look forward to that. That's why foreplay is so exciting, right? A good meal, a night out with the girls. But more importantly, less event-driven would be like receiving love, getting praise for something, a job well done, a simple thank you note, approval, things of that nature, and on and on and on. So it's kind of insidious because it happens without us knowing it. And it's all the time. This isn't something that like happens when you decide to go have a drink.
Yeah. That was awesome. I love the way you explained dopamine. I'm like obviously such a dopamine fiend. I talked about dopamine so first season, right? Like, and I assume it's common knowledge. So many people have come on to listen to the podcast who have literally never heard an explanation, I don't think, of me talking about dopamine or anyone else. So I just love the way that you described it because it really is the anticipation. And the cool thing about dopamine is, you know, when, I mean, maybe cool, maybe not, but this is where the addictive tendency comes. But it's just like every time you expose yourself to that thing, pleasure goes down, but craving goes up. So you want it more, but you know, and if you're listening to this and you're somebody who is wanting to become sober, or, you know, drinking the first time or the first couple of times you drink, like never, it never feels the same, you know, it's like you're always waiting for this, like exciting. But you know, especially if you have consistent exposure, it doesn't feel better. It doesn't take the edge off anymore. And, you know, I was an addict as well. I also do not like the term or identifying with it, but I was addicted to alcohol at one point in my life. And, I remember being that same way, just being like, oh my gosh, I'm desperately looking for that relief, but it's not giving it to me anymore. And yet you continue to engage in it over and over again. So super interesting. Okay. So you had this extensive history with trying to escape your pain of the job you didn't like. And so then you start drinking and then you're like, nope, I'm going to become sober for real this time. Then what happens?
Yeah. And then the journey really began. I heard a podcast. I'm a huge podcast fan. I love listening to them more than I like speaking on them, but I also love this side of the house. You know, like everyone does, like they're cleaning their house on a Saturday or whatever it is, multitasking. I had my earbuds in listening to Glennon Doyle And on that particular podcast, she had on Martha Beck. I had never heard of Martha Beck. Many of your audience members may have. She's super famous. I was in the dark. And she was talking about, and she didn't even refer to it by name. She was talking about a place of home, a place that she's been going to for 10 or 20 years. And it happened to be in South Africa, happened to be at a safari destination. And I had been begging, and I say that meaningfully, for my parents in particular to give me a trip to a safari since I was three. It's literally the only gift I've ever asked for and I've never received, obviously, because it's very expensive. But I always wanted to go on safari. So I was cleaning, gotten sober, was in the very early stages of my sobriety, heard her talking about the safari, and I was like, I'm going to go. So I get on the line, submit an application. I had no idea it was like a selective process. I was so arrogant. I was like, obviously you just apply and you get to go. No, there's like 10 people that are selected to go on this like mega amazing trip. Fast forward, we're in South Africa under this like vast canopy, like snuggled in these trees, and there's elephants on the savanna, and you can hear the lions roaring from, you know, miles away, and the birds are flitting from tree to tree. And I'm in a coaching session with Martha Beck, the Martha Beck, the originator of life coaching. She's got three Harvard degrees. She used to work for Oprah. I mean, she's no slouch. And turns out getting sober was like the keystone of my transformation. Without this, I would have never been able to unlock the next stages because I was basically flying blind. I was keeping everything as okay as possible by numbing myself out. And so when I stopped numbing myself out, things hurt more. Everything hurt so much more. Like literally my body hurts. My relationships felt painful. I was really in what we like to call like the red zone, where I was afraid. I was so beyond fight or flight. I was like in survival, like true survival, not like, I'm trying to get by. Like, no, like this is a problem. And then everything was also painted in red that I saw around me. My marriage felt at risk. Thank God I had amazing friendships and that didn't feel like a scary place, but everything else felt really scary, right? Money felt scary. I had decided to leave my job finally. And, you know, when you take away lots of your safety nets, the ground begins to tumble. And, you know, if you're a tarot card person, this is the tower phase, right? Where things are crumbling around you and you get smart fast. You know, you really have to kind of figure it out. But I wanted to go as fast as I had always gone. I've heard people call me like a thoroughbred racehorse. I don't know how much I love that, but the image fits, like I'm going quickly. And so I wanted to go quickly through the healing process too. As you know, that doesn't always work. You know, and if we force it, it doesn't always stick. So I made a lot of wrong turns, And luckily because I was sober and because I was living a low dopamine lifestyle, and we can talk about what that means, I could recognize the signals faster. You know, I just had taken off all of the rose-colored glasses were gone. I felt the things that hurt, the conversations that I needed to have, I was having them. And so I was bumping up against things faster than I would have historically, which, you know, it's not exactly the most delightful image, but, you know, I'm just literally like bouncing through space and time, finding a place that like I can resonate with. Yeah. And I wrote a book. And so that was really my touchstone, was sobriety and writing. And turns out my coven, like just being with my people, like being in nature with people that I don't have to effort myself around, if that makes sense. Like we're frequency holders, so we can just talk. Pretty spectacular. And lots of errors. I don't want people to realize, like, you just take this exact path and that's how it works. Like, anyone who tells you that's bullshit. So that's not how it is.
Anyone tells you that, call the police. They're crazy. Let's talk about this low dopamine lifestyle. What does that look like? Why would we do that? Like, truly.
Yeah. So I want to mention what you mentioned before is like, you know, let's just take whatever drug of choice, that first time you do it is the highest of highs, right? And why that's kind of happening in the background is even if we're getting the same peak of the whatever chemical mixture is in the mix, right? Let's just stay on the dopamine topic. Let's say we hit an 8 or a 9 out of 10 out of 10 on the peak of that chemical. Well, if we're constantly submitting ourselves to that level, we're getting 8s all the time. 8, 8, 8. It's not that interesting anymore, right? And so there's like no noticeable difference. So I don't know if you, I'll use another analogy of like when you go to the gym and you pick up like a 5-pound weight and then you pick up like a 10-pound weight, then you can notice the difference. But if you maybe picked up a 5 and a 6, you might not actually be able to tell the difference, even though technically it's a different amount. So there's no noticeable difference when you expose yourself to these kind of chemicals on a regular basis. And this is, I know this is so nerdy, but if we go back in time, you know, if we're looking back and how this all works, instead of hovering at an 8 or a 9 out of 10 synthetically, we're trying to get to like a 3 or a 4. So when we have an 8 experience, when we go on a safari, when we go diving in a shark cave, when we have a beautiful conversation with a friend, when someone gives us a thank you note, when someone asks, hey, I would love to spend a weekend with you and blah, 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 you feel it. You can actually tell the difference. And so that's really what this is about. I'm not trying to trick people. I'm not trying to take people's things away from them, their crutches. But if you're gonna experience pleasure, you can't live at an 8 or a 9 or a 10 and actually feel true, noticeable, genuine pleasure. So that's really what it's about, like the why behind it. And so how it works is really avoiding synthetic highs, these massive dopamine hits. Like, you know, I suspect most of your listeners are not heavy meth users, but there's like 1,000% increase over baseline from meth. Like it's crazy, but alcohol is like 200, something like that. Coke is like 300, something to that effect. And so if we can get rid of like those really synthetic highs, then we can introduce more. I'm always afraid to use the term like natural or organic, but we can just think of it as like less manufactured. How we'll just say it how that is. That could be going to a shooting range. It doesn't have to be like one with the, or, you know, you could be doing a lot of different things. It doesn't have to look like a bath or meditating for hours on end. It doesn't have to look anything like that. But we do more of the things that actually give us real pleasure. Now, the problem is, most people have no fucking clue what gives them pleasure outside of drinking, drugging, scrolling, shopping, all that kind of stuff. So in my coaching practice, that's where I spend the vast majority of our time, is helping people figure out, oh, you took all my stuff. I'm floating in an abyss and I have no idea what to do with myself. And it now feels terrible. And this is more complicated because it's per person.
Hi babes, I am so excited to talk to you about my signature program, The Mindful Method. This is the exact same method that I have been using with hundreds of successful clients to help you heal your relationship to food, to increase confidence, and to lose weight without dieting or killing yourself at the gym. If you're sick of not feeling like your best self, if you're sick of promising yourself that you'll start again on Monday, if you're sick of going on restrictive diets only to gain back the weight, I can tell you right now that if you gained it back, it did not work. You know what's healthy and what's not. You do. You just continue to choose the unhealthy option anyways. And a meal plan will not solve this issue. There is no amount of restriction or discipline or willpower that is going to stop you from self-sabotaging. The body follows the mind. Imagine a life where you don't have to think about what you can or can't eat. Imagine a life where you feel confident in all of your clothes, where every day and every way your body rebalances and you lose all of the weight so you find the truest, healthiest version of yourself. Imagine never having to start again on Monday. This is what happens when you focus on transforming the brain so weight loss is effortless. The body follows the mind, and it's time you actually get to the root cause of your issue.
If you are ready to transform and find the truest, healthiest version of you without letting go of your favorite foods, I invite you to fill out the application in my bio. And if you're a good fit, we'll be in touch soon. Back to regular programming.
No, that was such a great explanation. When you talked about the weights, I was like, this is exactly like if you go to the gym and you pick up a 5 pound weight and it's heavy, but like every day you pick up the 5 pound weight, eventually it's just not heavy anymore. And it's like, and then you just like get used to it. Right. But I love what you said about how, most people don't know what gives them pleasure. And I think that's also because the things that like will create this less manufactured type of pleasure in comparison to like the alcohol, the tobacco, like, it's like, you know, that smile from a stranger, like doesn't really feel very pleasurable when like you're chasing the high of cocaine, right? Or you're chasing the high of like this chocolate chip cookie that you have every day. And so I like with the way, just correct me if I'm wrong, cause I'm paraphrasing here and potentially putting words in your mouth, but like, when we get rid of all the more synthetic stuff, then the simpler pleasures, not necessarily just kumbayaing, but like just like simpler pleasures can feel actually pleasurable. Is that correct?
Yes, because they are, right? And like you have to figure out what those things are. But if they're truly pleasurable to you and you're not inundated with the synthetic stuff, you'll notice and it'll be really yummy. Mm-hmm. And you'll crave it. Mm-hmm. In a good way.
Okay. So, so then like, I know I'm assuming the place to start is like, you got to get rid of all the synthetic stuff first. Right. And then be kind of like left in that void. Once you're left in that void, once you get rid of most of the synthetic stuff, like what's step number two? What do we do?
Yeah. And I'll back up a little bit with like, yes, you want to get rid of the synthetic stuff. There's tools to get you there. Like I'm not a sobriety coach. There's really great instructors and coaches and leaders out there that are like, will help you get from point A to point B more effectively than I think I probably could. But let's assume you're on that path. What I hope your coach is doing with you during that time is addressing all those limiting beliefs that keep you going for it, right? So this is all I deserve, or this is the only way I can, I always is this day, I never that, all these really strong statements. But that's for sure something we would talk about along the way as well, is this the reasons why we're looking for it. Step two. I nerd out about this because I think it's really fun. Something I call curiosity hunting. So it's equally delightful for men and for women. And this helps us figure out what it is that we're actually interested in. And it's not something I can be like, okay, let me give you this. Oh my gosh, I'll just one side story. There's a point in my early days with my relationship with my now husband where we were like figuring out what's fun for us to do, right? So I went online and I was like printing off like things to do in the city or whatever, you know? And I looked at all of them and I was like, no, no, maybe, definitely not. No, it was a lot of no's. And I'm like, oh God, this is gonna be rough, right? Like I'm not used to living in the city. Long story short, if I give you a list of things that I think might be pleasurable to you and you look through the list and you're saying no, that'll leave you feeling worse than where we started. So we don't do that. I don't give you a list of like fun, blah, 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 you can do on the weekends. What I will invite you to do is check out what you check out. So this is kind of a little bit like dating, you know, when you like give someone the second look and like, ooh, they're like interesting looking to me, you know, whatever you turn your head at, you hear something on the radio. Oh, that's kind of interesting. Maybe it's a song. Maybe it's probably not an advertisement. Someone talking on a podcast, kind of what catches your attention. There's a clue there. Now, it might not be the exact thing. It might not be, someone's talking about beekeeping or like honey or something like that. You might not get to like wanting to be a beekeeper. You know, I'm not saying it's like that direct of a path, but your investigation of what creates a queen bee or something could lead you down a path of like something else. Yeah. So we pay attention to what we pay attention to. I also really recommend people, this is the part where you mentioned earlier, of like why I had to go back, why I went for my PhD and why me not finishing it actually was interesting to the puzzle. There's a lot of things from our early days that really interested us that we were culturally told to stop doing. or we ran into too many hurdles and it really wasn't the right path. So like, I love geeking out about brain stuff. Doesn't mean I need to be a professor in that area. So I also invite people to kind of look at what they were really into. Like, I've always loved playing in the dirt, you know, and like now socially acceptable to be a gardener and to have your own little farm or whatever. But when I was little, I used to play with like the grubs and in the little creeks and the frogs and stuff. Like, there's things that we used to really like before we were told they weren't cool. And so I ask people to kind of look back at the history too of what they've always really been fascinated by. Like for me, like you couldn't put on whatever those earth shows are, like Life on Planet Earth, any of this stuff. Like, it stops me dead in my tracks. And someone else would walk right by and it would never be interesting to them. Similarly, my husband loves talking about tax strategies, and I want to literally do anything that I can possibly do to avoid such a conversation. But for him, he like, it energizes him. So we look for that stuff too.
I love that. I remember when you first talked about that on our masterclass, and I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. Like, it is that energy of like, what I'm just, oh yeah, I'm just going to do a second take on that. And the cool thing about this is that I can imagine, like, if we really think about what life is about, I mean, of course, relationships, whatever, but like, it is about like living life. And so when we're constantly chasing these like highs, or, you know, stuck in the 9 to 5, the rigmarole, like, we just kind of lose ourselves. But this really feels like when we're doing double takes, it really feels like we're like having this childlike curiosity of just like what, like following like one experience to the next. And that just feels so fulfilling, almost like it feels like a very full experience.
Yeah. And it shouldn't take any energy. I think that that's what's cool about this. Like, and I don't know, when I've worked with therapists and they're like, okay, so after this week, I want you to do this for 10 minutes a day. And I'm like, I just don't want to. And I'm a bad patient sometimes, but this should not feel like homework. It should be like, you're so excited. So like, someone's given you permission to like geek out on, I don't know, like how fire really works. Like, what is exactly happening at the point of ignition, right? Like, I don't know nor care. I have a candle going, right? But someone else might really love that. And so it should be very enjoyable and very, to your point, childlike, without someone being like, just let go and let live. Like, it's more concrete, right, than someone giving you like a platitude of how to live your life. And it's not prescriptive. So.
Okay. So interesting, because while when you talked about the low dopamine lifestyle, like, I actually had a fully different idea of what you meant by that. But when we talk about this low dopamine lifestyle, like, it does still feel like we're receiving these hits of dope. We're going from like one curiosity to the next, right? So like, how, okay, so, and I think I might just be projecting or like speaking through something that I'm going through right now, but when you're like in the void and you've like taken the things away, you're not getting the messages from whatever, or like nobody, like you're not getting people signing up for your program, or like, there's like, it's almost this like space in between, you're in this void and you're kind of looking like, where is everybody? Like, where's my reinforcement? Where's my validation? Like, what would you suggest for somebody who is in that place that just like, it doesn't feel like things are coming through and nothing feels exciting?
Yeah. So I want to talk about two areas. Like, one, I want to talk about like the theory behind this, and then I'll go like into a tactical, like, not going to leave people hanging. This is a very interesting part of our culture, is that void time or limbo is like super not okay. Many other cultures honor this period. It's like a proper initiation. You have ended one chapter of your life, a new one is beginning, but we have not made the transition yet fully. I mean, just think about like in our culture, I'll mention one that we do pretty well. So we often honor people that are pregnant. And then there's this transition from pregnancy through the birthing cycle to an actual baby being in this planet. It's one of the only ones we really do. Like, even like marriage and stuff like that, like there's a little bit of like the engagement period and like we do some pomp and circumstance or whatever, but like we don't do too much of like, okay, now you're married, like that's when the transition's actually starting, right? Of like, now you have to learn how to live as a married person and manage that gap. So we don't do that super well. So we don't have that many at bats. So in our culture, our recommendation is usually get out the fastest you possibly can, like grab onto anything. So in one breath, I could say, sure, grab onto anything that you can. You're going to probably drop it eventually. That's fine. That's what I did, right? Bumping up against something. Oh, no, that wasn't it. But, oh God, that wasn't it either. That's real. So like, that's probably what it's going to look like. Now, my advice would be stay in the void as long as you can, like just honor the transition period, but it feels really shitty. So at that point, I would say, hold on to that one person that, you know, you can talk to about this stuff. You know, you just need one person that you can have an honest conversation, and not even from like a advice seeking kind of perspective, but just more of a, like, I'm lost, and like, let that be okay. There's a lot of Eastern traditions that talk about the don't know mindset. I'm in the don't know. When you say, I don't know, people think that you're like not educated or you're dumb or you should know better. But if you could say, I don't know, I don't know what interests me, and let that be like actually okay, there's a lot of beauty in that. That'll get you there faster, but it's not what people want to hear. So I really understand that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the truth of it. Yeah. I'm trying to be very different than the people who are like, here's the thing you should do, and it gets you there in 30 days. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah, I wouldn't even expect that, because it just, this topic is so personal, and there's so many predispositions and like just societal things that influence the way that we like run our lives. But yeah, it's interesting. Like, I feel just personally set, like yesterday was a day where it was like, everything's coming in at once and it's so exciting and I'm bouncing from this to this. And then today, like literally before our call, I'm like checking my messages. Like, oh, what does anybody need? Like, it feels so empty. So I feel, and I obviously, when I work with my coach, she's always just like, sit in the discomfort, sit in. I'm like, I'm gonna literally kill you if you tell me that one more time. But I think it was like perfectly aligned for this call, because I can actually feel in my body what that void really feels like. And if we transition it into, rather than thinking about, oh, I need to escape this void, or I need to like go to my next hit of something, and just like honor it and like, oh, this is the cocoon period, or like, this is where I'm resting to make space for other things, then it is just a totally different energy. So I love that. Okay. How can people begin to heal the relationship with pleasure? Like, when I started this conversation, I told you I had a very like negative, I mean, I wouldn't even think it's negative. It's just, it's very like, ooh, a taboo, not like type of perception around pleasure. But most of the women that I work with, when I ask them that question, they're like, oh, pleasure, like pleasure's bad. Like, and I don't, so how would you suggest we kind of recover our relationship to pleasure?
Yeah. Well, I can like distinctly remember when I asked you that question and had, you know, the folks that were on the call that day kind of share their one or two words that they associate with pleasure. And I remember you saying like taboo, or maybe you said naughty or something like that. And I instantly was like, ooh, I like this, you know, like that's it. Those words like don't have a negative connotation to me, which is funny, which is, that's my own shit. But there's a lot of limiting beliefs behind this, right? And so this is where we do what I would consider like the deepest amount of work. So there's like behavioral changes that we do. But for them to last, we have to address the stuff underneath. Right. And so, you know, pleasure coach is like a little bit of a cheeky, fun title. It gets people kind of to do that curiosity, get to do that double take. I've got them, but it's really about creating a regenerative lifestyle. So, and I want to address your question directly, but we're looking for a lifestyle that creates more for us versus us like just trying to like stick through it. Even the word sustainable isn't quite right. So sustainable just means I can do this for as long as possible, but it doesn't create more along the way. And so we're looking for pleasurable things that give us more than we have to invest into them. And so that can, for a lot of people, when they look at it like that, they're seeing, I'm not just taking, like we're creating systems. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen, I just saw this the other day on social media where there were four watering cans. That sounds weird. I want to say jugs. And then I have a image that comes to mind. So we're going to just stay with watering cans, and they're set up like in a square. So the spout of one goes into this, like the belly of the next, and the spout of that one goes into the belly of the next. And that's coming from like a watering hose or something like that. And eventually they all fill up and then they all become even. So we're looking for systems that create that sort of thing in our life. And so we're not just chasing pleasure. We're looking to create a life that allows us to have what we need, allows others to get what they need, and so on and so forth. But there are limiting beliefs, and this is what we would look at. And everyone's are different. So let's just say someone has a belief that, I'll just take a pretty basic one. Like, I can't work out because my son needs X from me. So we have to really look into like what that is. Like, how is it possible that you truly don't have 30 minutes to for yourself of the 24 hours that are in this period? Like, if that's a true statement to them, that requires a lot of digging. And everyone's belief will be different. And it's not for me to say you do have 30 minutes. Like, you might not. That might be true. Probably not true, but it might be true. So I don't want to like come in saying like you're wrong, but we would go through a very specific process of addressing that. I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Byron Katie. She's a really beautiful spiritual teacher. Okay, this is mind-blowing. It's called The Work, and it's effortful. I'll just put it that way to begin. And we look at all of those statements, all of those beliefs that we really hold dear, all these things that cause us pain and suffering, that I don't deserve pleasure. I haven't been good enough to receive today. I know no one loves me. All this stuff, it just like hurts. And so she has a really beautiful practice of looking at these statements through a series of questions. You could journal on them. I think they're really powerful in practice with someone else, another human. And that's the methodology that I use. And so she's helped millions of people. She's like, she's phenomenal. And that's what we would use. It's very effective. So I'm not going to make up a new system like when she's got something that works very, very well, but we look at it. And what's beautiful about the work is you get to see, like, there's a lot of pieces to us, a lot of parts of us, if you're an IFS person, there's a lot of parts of us that need attention. But we can get to the outcome that we want by addressing the stuff that's kind of getting in the way. This is not novel. But that's where the work really happens. And I can't give you like a blanket statement of like pleasure is always good. Like, I'm not here to give you that kind of stuff. Everyone's in different phases of their life. If someone's in deep mourning, it's different, right? That we need to approach that differently. I'm not going to prioritize their bath time when there's other stuff going on, right? So it's a very comprehensive look at what's going on in people's lives.
Perfect.
Yeah. And for some other people, like, it could be a big hurdle to get over. Like, this, it could be a really big hurdle. So I want to honor that too, that it's like, you just sit down for 30 minutes and it's fine.
Yeah. No, I can totally imagine, because I feel like, I know, I'll speak to myself, but like, pleasure is something that my parents like never prioritized pleasure in themselves, but also like, pleasure was always seen as like gluttony in my household. And so there was a lot of like repression of pleasure. But then what that did was it actually pushed me so far in the other direction where I like, because the brain is going to seek pleasure regardless, right? But and then it just became a very destructive type of pleasure that I was seeking. And that was its own self-fulfilling prophecy. So super interesting. You talked about a practice at the beginning. I want to say the feel good method or some feel good something, feel good Mondays. Can you tell about what that is?
Yeah, so this is an old game I used to play called the Feel Good Game. I did not lead it. I was just a participant of it. But there's I host now a monthly challenge. It's called the 30-day dopamine detox. And it's all about reducing the synthetic dopamine hits and increasing those simple non-synthetic hits. Yeah, so it's finding those little things, right? And so for some people, especially where pleasure feels more like gluttony, it might look like more strategic things. Like, I worked out today, like that's productive. Yeah. So like we can get our hit from the productive side of the house too. I made a meal from scratch. I played music. I practiced a language. I practiced an instrument. We can come at it from a less like, you know, I'm not telling people to go eat cookies for fun, right? So they have to come at it from wherever they are is where we're going to start. So we play the game, you get points every day. You lose points for doing naughty stuff. You gain points for doing the good things. You only compete against yourself, but you'll get to see where your patterns stack, right? And just like everyone who talks about patterns, it takes time to break them. It takes time to build them, but particularly around these, like I'm using naughty, like in a bad kind of connotation now, not like a sexy kind of thing. For the naughty stuff, the synthetic stuff, they tend to create more yuck, right? So if you're up late doing coke, your next day is not going to feel awesome. You're likely to eat worse. You're likely to skip your workout. You're likely not to have the conversation you need to have at work. You're likely to push all of that away. So those 30 days are really eye-opening because you just get to see what's actually happening without like trying to fix everything all at once. It's kind of an honest look. And so I can call it a detox, but it's honestly doing the best you can for a period of time to get a true look at what's happening. So it's not anybody saying, pointing the finger at you and telling you what you're doing wrong. You'll see what's going on once you have a way to track it. So that's the detox. That's a 30-day detox. Yeah.
That sounds
$27. Crazy to get involved. Every Monday we start.
We're going
to
link all of that up here. That's actually, I think, a really good place to start because I know a lot of people who listen. I mean, my entire network is really like addiction or food addiction or other type of addiction based. And then also like learning to love yourself, and who doesn't want to learn to have a happier, more fulfilling life. But it really seems like I think the initial thought when we talk about like this dopamine detox or like getting rid of all the synthetic stuff, the initial feeling is like, oh, but then like what's left and we're going to be in the void. But I can just tell you, speak from experience, despite what I just said I'm going through right now. But when you actually like take that stuff out and you start to build like these more simple pleasures, like the life is so much more fulfilling. Like you're just, there's the experience of happiness is like, it's like, you're not sacrificing long-term pleasure for short-term gain anymore. It's like, it's this long extended, I think you use the word regenerative, which I love, that it kind of goes on and it feeds each other and on and on. So I would definitely encourage everybody listening to follow Brooke. We'll link everything up, do her 30-day detox. That sounds like so much fun. You might see me there. But Brooke, you know, I this was so lovely talking to you. Is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners before I get you to talk about where we can find you?
You know, I just like always want to leave people feeling like there's lots of paths forward. There's lots of ways to go backwards, which is just as delightful as going forwards. Like it can be a circular process. We can have the starts and we can have the stops. I think even people listening to the very tail end of this, like that's a really beautiful sign of some amount of interest and like forward progress if that's what you're after. And it can be so fun. And like, it's one of those things when someone's like, okay, come to this. I'm going to use a terrible example. I don't know. Poem workshop. And you're like, there's literally nothing I'd like to do less than go to some fucking poem workshop. But then you show up and you have a good attitude and maybe you're surprised yourself. And this is one of those things where it's effortful. And so it might not look like this easy breezy path to success. But there's just so much that opens up for people. And I can't even say what would open up because it's so different for every single person, but I've never met a single person that has started on this path that has regretted it. And I think that's really meaningful, and it might take them time and they might have lots of mistakes along the way, but everyone's thankful and everyone has, you know, and this is the most interesting part of the puzzle to me. They'll have lots of wins, right? They'll have more energy. They'll have less anxiety. They're going to start sleeping better. They probably lose weight, but their relationships improve 100% of the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know anybody that would look at me in the eye and say, I don't need that.
Yeah,
I'm good. Everything's perfect in all of my relationships. And so I'll leave it with that of like, if we're looking long-term, there's some really beautiful unintended beautiful consequences that come out of this. So it's exciting that we're even thinking about it, I guess is my point.
Amazing. I love that. And just finally, where can we all find you? I'm sure people will be eager to search.
Yeah. So you can go to my website. It's brooklevitt.com, B-R-O-O-K-E-L-E-A, V as in Victor, I-T-T. And then I'm on Instagram. It's at thebrooklevitt. So same spelling. Yeah.
We will link.
Also on Substack, which is my favorite place to contact people because my writing, long form writing, is my favorite. So you can find me over there too.
Oh, I love that. Okay. Well, it just sent, make sure you send me that link too. I'm not sure if you linked that up, but we will put everything up here. I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your expertise. I know that you are an absolute wealth of knowledge. And if you guys liked this episode, don't forget to like and subscribe and share it with somebody who might need it. And we'll see you back on another episode of the Mindful Method Podcast. Bye.